Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. It's not that long since last we spoke. In fact, it was only yesterday because we had a special bonus Arscast, midweek bonus Arscast, with Ken Early from Second Captains, a kind of season review chat looking at the title race, the top four, the Champions League final, the Europa League final, and lots more besides. And actually, we did talk at some length about the Henrik Mkhitaryan situation, which has dominated the news this week. It has dominated the headlines and the conversation around the Europa League final, which really is a shame for so many reasons. And I'm not really going to do too much on that today because we've talked it to death. Myself and James talked about it on Monday to an extent, and then on Tuesday evening we talked about it on our live stream, our YouTube live stream for Patreon members, which you can get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. I also spoke quite a bit about it with Ken in yesterday's episode, so if you haven't heard it yet, that's where you'll hear the discussion of that situation more than on today's podcast, even though it is very heavily focused towards the Europa League. I'm chatting with Charles Watts of Goal. He is heading to Baku on Monday. He's got a hell of a trip ahead of him. We'll talk about that and look ahead to the game, of course, even though I know we're going to talk about it on Monday, myself and James in the Arscast Extra, but some of the decisions that Unai Emery is going to have to make in terms of his team, not least the goalkeeping situation. So we chat quite a bit about Petr Cech versus Bernd Leno and who Unai Emery should pick for the game and who we think he will pick for the game. And then we talk about, well, I don't suppose it's really a story per se, but Arsenal's managing director Vinay Venkatesham and the head of football Raul Sanyehi sat down for one lengthy interview, which was broken up into two parts, and there was a lot of stuff to come out of it. Some of it was like, okay, we've heard all this before, you know, the KSE stuff and what have you, but there was some stuff about transfers and the structures of the club and how we're going to get business done this summer, which was quite interesting because we haven't really heard a great deal from anybody, and we've been left in the dark as fans because Sven Mislintat has left, and we know that we tried to bring in Monchi and that didn't work, and then Edu, is he coming, is he not? It seems that he is, but it won't be till after the Copa America. Who is making the decisions? What are we going to do when the transfer window opens? And they gave us some insight into that. You know, they talked about trimming the wage bill, and they talked about, you know, being efficient with the wage bill, which I think gives you a big hint about what they might want to do. So Charles and I talk quite a bit about that as well, and the impressions that we took from the interviews. The one thing that struck me above everything else, though, from these interviews was Raul Sanyehi's voice. He sounds like a man who has smoked, what's that brand of Spanish cigarettes? Ducados. Ducados were a very popular brand of cigarette when I was living there. He sounds like he smokes about 60 of those every single day / hour, perhaps. I had no idea from looking at him what he sounded like. Sometimes you can look at somebody and you say, I kind of know what you sound like just because what you look like, but I had no idea what Raul Sanyehi sounds like. If you haven't seen the video and you haven't heard him speak yet, here's a little clip. This is quite an interesting clip talking about some of our transfer plans for the summer, but you'll get a good idea of what I'm talking about when it comes to his voice as well.
We're very clear on what our priorities are. We are already in the market. We're already talking with the people that can help us to cover those positions. And I feel quite strong. It's going well. The image that Arsenal has in the football world is very strong. Vinay was mentioning we're a top world club, and we are, so we need to go where we belong, and that's the Champions League. And many players really want us to be there also when we're talking with them. But I feel quite strong on the inputs that I'm getting so far. I do believe that we have a very good plan to cover those positions, to be much stronger next year, to deliver the success that we're all hoping for.
Oh my God, it sounds incredible. Imagine talking like that all the time. It will get very painful very quickly because you are doing this. It sounds like you are trying to squeeze out a bit of poo that will not come out. And you are on the edge of the seat doing this. And there we go.
Some voice, eh? Some voice. He talks a good game, does Raul Sanyehi. I gotta give him that. However, with the caveat that we have been in the position before where people, at the top of the club, more or less, talked a much better game than they actually played. You know what I mean.
So, this is our tunnel area.
So, you know, there's an element of once bitten or twice bitten or five times bitten, twice shy, or whatever the hell it might be in those circumstances. I really, really, really want to believe. I do. I want to believe that these guys can absolutely deliver what they say they are going to deliver and how they're going to deliver it. Because, you know, hope is a good thing. Hope is a positive thing. It gives you something to cling on to. I remember Ian Wright on this podcast saying, if you don't have hope, what the fuck have you got? And the answer is despair and emptiness and a vacuum of opportunity and possibility. That's the stark answer to that. But, you know, I want to believe and I want to have that hope going into this summer. But at the same time, you know, we have heard people say things before that have not been backed up. We're now very much in a situation where actions must speak louder than words. We're great at talking. We will be the Champions League winners of talking about how things are going to be brilliant. And what we actually need to do is put in place things which do actually make things brilliant. It's Sanyehi's first summer in charge of football things at this club. So, you know, I'm going to step back. I'm going to wear a slightly cynical expression and then just wait and see what happens. And after that, then we can make some judgments. But I think, as much as I worry about where we're going with the ownership and the budgets that we have in play and how much we need to do and, you know, not having a head of recruitment per se and not having a technical director yet and all that kind of stuff, it's hard not to worry. It is hard not to worry, but at least they've come out and they've said stuff. And that's better than saying nothing. So that's a little bit of a step forward. And then we just see what the summer brings. And after, the despair and the vacuum of hope and possibility. But we'll cross that terrible, lonely, dark, grey bridge when we come to it. Right, let's get on with the show. And joining me today to talk it all out is Charles Watts from Goal. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Andrew. Good to speak to you again, mate.
And you, we were just talking before we came on about your your trip to Baku next week, which I figured was going to be a little bit challenging. But from what you've just told me, it's worth repeating again. If you could tell people what you're going to, people sort of, I guess in some ways would say, the life of a journalist, going to a football match, covering a football match, going to a press conference, you know, it seems pretty, I suppose, glamorous in a way, because it's quite a cool thing and it's a very cool job, but maybe they don't quite realize how much you've got on your plate next week. So you're leaving London on Monday.
Yeah, it's not all that it seems. It's not as glamorous as it seems, certainly not, even not just going abroad, but the English side of things, going to and from matches, living in motorway service stations and all that. It's going to be an epic journey. Look, first of all, I don't want to complain too much about it because I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm not having to pay for what I'm going to have to go through to get to Baku and get back from it, unlike the Arsenal fans who are heading over there, shelling out ridiculous amounts of money to go to a football match. So yeah, I fly out on Monday from Heathrow to Moscow. We've got about a 7-hour wait in Moscow. And I get to Baku about 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning. Then that Tuesday I got the press conference and the training session and stuff. And then that night is going to be pretty much the only night where I think I might get a little bit of sleep. Next day's Wednesday, so the game kicks off at 11 o'clock that night. Finish 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock of extra time, then press conference, celebrations, player interviews and stuff. Leave about 4 a.m, check out that morning on a Thursday morning, then have to wait until the following Friday morning at 5 a.m. to fly back to Moscow. Another long way in Moscow, and then eventually get home about, I think it's about 1 o'clock on Friday UK time. So, yeah, it's not pretty. It's going to be pretty horrific. No sleep from the Monday morning, really, for 5 days. It's not going to be much fun, but you've got to do it, haven't you? And there was a chance at one point I wasn't going to get over there because of just availability and price and everything like that. Yeah. So I'm happy that I'm going and then I am there, and hopefully I'm going to see Arsenal win the first European competition since that glorious day against Parma. But I think by the time I get back, I'm going to certainly feel like I need a few days off.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it does put into sort of real clarity the issues that people are having to go to this final, whether they're working as a journalist or whether they're a fan, you know. The ones who are going are very, very dedicated. It has to
absolutely,
be said.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I'm sure you've covered it loads in previous podcasts and everything, but it's just the whole thing's such a farce. It is. I mean, I just can't believe everything that's going wrong or that is wrong about this final. It's just so many things stacking up, and it's such a ridiculous situation and decision from UEFA.
Yeah, I mean, there just seems to be so much going on with this, because you think about, you know, Arsenal in a European final, and what it should be is a glorious celebration of football and a brilliant opportunity and a day of real excitement. And look, don't get me wrong, and I'm sure you're the same and everyone listening is the same, that when this game comes around and the game kicks off, the whistle blows, we're all going to be absolutely enraptured by what happens on the pitch and excited and enthralled and everything else. But when you consider the ticket allocation, the fact that we can't even sell half of our ticket allocation, fans being excluded from Azerbaijan because of having Armenian heritage, the Henrik Mkhitaryan situation, the difficulty and the cost for Arsenal fans and for Chelsea fans to get to Azerbaijan, to Baku, to get there and back for a European final. What else? Yeah, the Petr Cech thing, for example, which we might talk about in a moment, where, you know, the goalkeeper who's likely to start in goal for Arsenal against Chelsea, a story emerges during the week that he's going back to Chelsea as a sporting director in the summer. We'll leave that to one side just for the moment, but there is just this weight of so many things going on around the game that are such a distraction from what it should be.
Yeah, I mean, no one's focusing on the actual match, and what match it is, Arsenal v Chelsea in the European final. I mean, it's a massive occasion. And you think if this game was being played somewhere accessible, just somewhere in mainland Europe, you'd be having over 100,000 fans probably going over there, and thousands, tens of thousands without tickets just watching it in the city, which I'm sure the Champions League final in Madrid's going to be like. And the fact that between Arsenal and Chelsea, only 6,000 tickets have been sold, just sums it up. It's just farcical. It's just not right. It's not an acceptable situation for everything you've just listed. I mean, the fact that Arsenal's second highest earning player can't play in a match, and people say, oh, it's his choice. It's not his choice. If it's his choice, he's going to be playing in a European final. He's not going to want to miss this game.
Of course.
But he doesn't feel safe, and he has every right not to feel safe. And for all the bluster coming out of UEFA and from the Azerbaijani FA, and saying, oh, we can guarantee his safety. You can't guarantee his safety. Absolutely can't. He's literally the biggest star in Armenia. Aside from the president of Armenia going to this game, there's no bigger personality in that country than Henrik Mkhitaryan. And it's no surprise he doesn't feel safe going over there. And that should never, ever be allowed to happen. Yeah. UEFA's mantra, isn't it? It's all football's open to everyone. And, well, it's clearly not. It's not open to fans who can't get there. It's not open to a certain player of a team in the final. It's just the whole thing's a joke. And it's such a shame, because you should be so excited about European finals. You know, I've been to three of them following Arsenal, not as a reporter back then. It was a fan back then.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the only one I missed was Palmer. I've been to the three that we've lost.
But don't go to Baku, mate.
I know, don't go. I shouldn't have gone. I shouldn't have gone to Baku. I should have stayed at home. But the feeling before those finals, the excitement of getting there and just building up to it all, and there's been none of that this time, and it's such a shame. It's not right. And I'd love to say I hope UEFA learn from it, but I think we all know that they're not going to.
They're probably not. I mean, how do you feel this is, as much as we're, in some ways, I won't say obsessed, but this is very much a focus for us as fans, and you know what the experience is like for us, and what many fans are having to miss out on because of where the game is being played. You know, it is an opportunity. You don't get these very often to go and see a European final. So for so many fans, you know, to be excluded for various reasons, you know, that's kind of been what we're focused on. But within London Colney, within the Arsenal group, how do you think their preparations are going? I mean, the Mkhitaryan thing, for example, is clearly something that the players feel very strongly about. At the media day the other day, Lauren Koscielny hit out at UEFA. Nacho Monreal as well said, you know, it's not right that a player can't go and play for political reasons. But he also mentioned something that when they started the campaign and they knew the final was in Baku, they pretty much knew all along that Mkhitaryan was not going to be able to go if we got there. That was their understanding of the situation right from the very start, regardless of what assurances were put in place by UEFA or Arsenal or the Azerbaijani end of things. So they kind of knew that all along. So I'm not sure this is a shock to them, but do you think it could be a distraction in any way, or are they going to be really focused on trying to make up for the fact that he's not there?
I think in the sort of Colney bubble, you know, once they get out away from the media and away from the questions, once they're on the training pitch, I don't think it would be too much of a distraction. I think Emery will be very, you know, he knows what it takes to win this competition, I'm sure. As soon as he gets out on the training pitch, he's just focused purely on the final and making sure that the players are focused on it as well. So I don't think it's going to be too much of a distraction. I mean, I think it's a big thing because I think he could have played. I think he might well have started. If everyone was available, you know, at the moment, there's obviously no Ramsey. But when you think back to the game at the Emirates between the two and how important Ramsey's role was in that game, if Emery's going to replicate that sort of formation and have someone sitting tight on Jorginho in that sort of in the holding role of the Chelsea midfield, almost the player who dictates the play. You know, Ramsey was all over him at the Emirates, constantly on him, not giving him any time to get his head up and dictate anything. If Emery's going to try and replicate that, you think the player best served to do that would probably be Mkhitaryan. It wouldn't be Ozil, I don't think, out of choice.
That's not his.
Not that sort of player, is he?
He's not
going to harass Jorginho for the entire 90 minutes, but I think Mkhitaryan, you know, he's got a good work ethic and he'd get more in and around his face and try and disrupt things. So I think it's a big blow. Everyone thinks that Ozil's start, or was presuming Ozil's start. I wasn't so sure. I thought Mickey might well have started. And, you know, now there's even an option of possibly putting Iwobi there instead of Ozil, but I imagine it will be Ozil now. But I think it's certainly going to disrupt Emery's plans that he would have loved to have had. And you go back to the semi-final when Mkhitaryan came on. In Mestalla, he was very, very good in that last 25 minutes, and he set up a goal, and just that showing alone showed how important it was, even if he wasn't going to start in Baku, to have the option on the bench. It's a massive thing. So it is a real shame, and Emery won't be happy about the situation. He's not happy about the situation, but in terms of a distraction and everything that's going on at the moment, aside from it, I think once the players are away from the media and not having to feel questions about it all the time, I don't think it's going to disrupt things too much.
It does look, though, as if Danny Welbeck might be fit and ready to play. As we're talking on Thursday, Arsenal are playing a behind-closed-doors game against an Austrian side, and our good friend David Ornstein revealed last week or during the week that they played another behind-closed-doors game and Welbeck scored a hat-trick. I don't know who that was against. Do you know who that was against?
No, Arsenal aren't spilling the beans.
They're not spilling the beans.
Hasn't come out.
Keeping it quiet. So clearly they're trying to get some minutes into, you know, Welbeck and also the team, because there's such a gap between the end of the Premier League season and this final. But as much as Mkhitaryan would be a miss, having someone like Danny Welbeck on the bench, you know, I don't think he's in any way ready to start, nor should he after such a long time out of the game. But, you know, if there's 20 minutes to go in a final and we need a goal, you know, with all due respect to Eddie Nketiah, I think I'd rather bring on, you know, a full England international who has plenty of experience and has the kind of qualities that could cause a little bit of chaos in the Chelsea defence.
Yeah, and what a story that would be.
Oh, yeah.
Danny Welbeck coming on after
that. He could do a Leicester. He could do a Leicester.
Yeah, don't you? I mean, that was his first game back. He hadn't played at all.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Before he scored that header in the last minute. So he's got previous. I mean, it would be great. I'm a big Danny Welbeck fan. I think Arsenal should be keeping him. I actually think they're making a mistake letting him go. But, I was in training with the team for a fair while now. It's about a month, I think, he's been in full training. Like David Ornstein said, if he played that game, scored a hat-trick, he'll certainly be involved today as well, I imagine. So I think he's got a very good chance of going. I mean, you can name 12 subs in the Europa League final. So yeah. If he's fit, then I'm sure he definitely will go. And like you say, as promising as Eddie is, and I think he's been a little bit unlucky, Eddie, this season. He could easily have ended the season with, you know, 5-6 goals for the senior side rather than one. But 20 minutes ago, you need a goal. Like I said, I think you bring Danny Welbeck on for his work rate, for his aerial ability, and just for his experience. I think it would be a real big and unexpected boost, really, if he is involved.
Yeah, I'd be very happy to have him on the bench because without Mkhitaryan, we are lacking an experienced attacking option, presuming, of course, that he is going to start Lacazette and Aubameyang together, which, of course, I think he will.
I think he will, yeah. I think he'd be mad not to. I think you go back to that performance in Mestalla, and I think they'll try and pretty much go with that system now that Mickey's not there. You'll have Ozil behind those two, and Torreira, Xhaka, and then the defence, you know, picks itself, really. I'd have Leno in goal, but...
Yeah. Well, this is the question that many people are talking about this, and they're talking about, you know, whether Petr Cech should start in what would
he
be.
He shouldn't start. It's simple as that. He shouldn't start. He will, and I understand the thing. It's nothing new for Arsenal. We've been through this plenty of times with the FA Cup finals in the wins recently, haven't we? When the Arsenal second choice keeper started in goal under Wenger. But he shouldn't start. It's a massive game. It's worth millions of pounds for Arsenal. The next couple of seasons could be shaped by what happens in Baku, and you're going to be starting a goalkeeper who you freely accept is not your best goalkeeper.
It's just
a baffling situation to me.
It is one of those things that I've struggled with over the last number of years, particularly with cup finals. You know, when Fabianski started over Szczesny, when Ospina started over Cech, you know, we've got away with it to an extent. But I do feel, and always have felt, that your best goalkeeper, your number one goalkeeper, should start in a game of this importance. And I don't for one second have any doubt whatsoever about Petr Cech's professionalism, about his desire to win the game, regardless of what's happening with him this summer. If he's going back to Chelsea, it doesn't mean that he's going to, you know, be subconsciously willing to underperform or whatever it is. You know, I don't have any problem with that whatsoever. Where I stand on the matter, just purely pragmatically, is you play your absolute best team in a final, and Bernd Leno is our best goalkeeper, and I think he should play. And, you know, I say that, and there's part of me that kind of feels a little bit bad for Petr Cech, because I can see what an amazing thing it would be for him in his final game to win a trophy, a European trophy with Arsenal, to go out on an absolute high. You can see from everything that he said during the course of this season and recently via his Twitter account that he really, really wants this. He really wants this. You know, as a 37-year-old, he's won pretty much everything there is to win in football, but still, he views this as his last great day, a way to call time on his career. And, you know, for that reason, I think about it. I think about him and what a stand-up guy he is, what a great professional he is. All of those, he seems like a really, really decent guy. But I also think he should start on the bench.
It's exactly right. I mean, it is everything you mentioned there is right about Petr. He's a fantastic human being. I mean, you get some footballers, you meet a lot of footballers doing the job that I do who just think, oh, this is going to be awful. He's not going to care about talking to us. He's not going to really give us what, tell us what he really thinks about situations. He's just going to spill out the usual media trained waffle that you get from a lot of these players. But you sit down with Petr Cech and you get someone who really tells you what he believes. He speaks articulately. He's just a really interesting, good man who bucks the trend, really, in terms of how he deals with the media compared to a lot of footballers. So I've got so much respect for him professionally and personally as well, but he's not Arsenal's best goalkeeper. So you start your best goalkeeper. I mean, you wouldn't leave, say you, there was a similar situation where you've been playing a certain forward for some games, but as soon as you get towards the business end of a competition, you're going to play your best. You'd never be getting to a situation where you're thinking, I'm not going to play Aubameyang because I've given Eddie Nketiah a few games in this competition, have I? So why would you do it at a goalkeeper? It
well, the gulf isn't quite that big, but I do know what you mean.
And for Cech, he's so excited about it. In the mix zone after the win in Valencia, he was coming through, as he always does, and talks to the media while a lot of the other players just disappear with their heads down. But he'll come over and talk and give his views. And the Chelsea game had obviously gone to extra time against Frankfurt and then went to penalty shootouts, and he stood with us as he was a bit further down the line with some foreign reporters, and he watched the penalty shootout on the guy's phone. I was watching it live to see, and you could see he so wanted Chelsea to win because he's just desperate to finish his career with Arsenal with Chelsea. He's felt for a long time, and he said it openly. He feels like it's his destiny to finish his career playing in this match. And so obviously if Emery were to turn around and say you're starting on the bench, he'd be heartbroken, he'd be devastated. But you can't, there's surely no room for sentiment in football, especially when there's so much on the line. I mean, you can't get away from the fact of how big this match is for Arsenal, for Emery, for everyone.
For Emery, I think the failure to reach top four might complicate the decision in his mind. Like, I pretty much expect him to play Cech.
I think he'll start Cech, yeah. I think he will
start Cech. But I also think maybe what's happened with this leak, which I think we can safely say came from the Chelsea side of things. You know, they saw Arsenal having a really difficult week and decided to stick the knife in a bit, you know, via the media.
I'm not so sure about it. I don't know. I was actually with a Chelsea reporter when Sky ran. I mean, that story's nothing new. It's been out for a while. Van Gaal ran it a while ago. Our Chelsea guy, Nazir, ran it about a week earlier. Then Sky obviously decided to run it that day, go big on it that day.
And right.
From what I've heard from a lot of Chelsea reporters, that Chelsea have been, you know, desperate to avoid the situation that they're suddenly in now. Well, maybe I'm being overly sort of protective of them, and I shouldn't be because, you know, I've got no feelings towards Chelsea. But I'm not sure. It's easy to think it's come from them, but I'm not sure it has. I mean, well, it's an open secret. Everyone knows about it.
Yeah, I got an email, and I apologise to the guy in question, or maybe I wasn't allowed to say, but I got an email maybe 2 months ago, perhaps more. This season has gone by so fast, I can barely remember, but it was, he was in a hotel in Cobham, and Petr Cech was there with a Chelsea delegation, and they were obviously discussing this job opportunity. And that was 2 or 3 months ago. So it has been out in the open for quite a while. I just wonder, you know, if
it was interesting, the timing of it for Sky to suddenly get really big.
That's right, just a little bit suspicious, just in terms of what people think. We did a little poll on Arsblog News about who should play in goal, whether it's Petr Cech or Bernd Leno. Bernd Leno, 62%. Petr Cech, 38%. That is a referendum result that nobody could argue with.
No, I'm surprised that Cech even got 38%.
I think if you said Bernd Leno or Manuel Almunia, there might be a larger discrepancy. I think Petr Cech has performed pretty well all in all this season, you know, and I think people can see the human situation of this, you know, as much as we all want to be ruthless and we want to say, play your best goalkeeper, which is essentially what we've said, you know, it feels almost like kicking a puppy at the same time, which is where I guess a lot of people
There's an argument as well about how the dressing room will take it. Cech's very, very popular, and Emery's made this promise and then suddenly goes back on him. He, you know, a lot of the teammates might think, a little bit less of Emery, and it might disrupt things even more ahead of a final, perhaps. So there is that.
Yeah.
There is that side of things to come into it. I mean, I sat down with Bernd Leno a few weeks ago at London Colney, actually did an interview, and I asked him, you know, would you reject the opportunity, having not played in it aside from the first couple of group games, would you turn down the opportunity out of respect for Petr Cech? It was kind of similar to the Ben Foster situation with Watford, and Foster said he wouldn't play even if he was asked to by Gracia, because he thought Gomez deserved to start in the FA Cup final. And Leno, pretty much said to me, no way, I would never reject that chance. Finals don't come around too often. I'd play straight away. But I don't think Leno would have any problems with it.
No, nor should he. I mean, he's a professional, and, you know, if he's selected, he's asked to do the job, and you get out there and you do the job. You know, it's not on him to decide who plays in goal in a cup final. You know, if Emery says, I'm going to go with you, then, you know, that's it. The Foster-Gomez thing was a bit weird, actually, but, you know. Look, we'll see what happens. I do think it is going to be Czech, but we'll wait and see. And no doubt this is a story that will crop up again over the coming days before we get to next Wednesday. Just moving away from Europa League to something more in-house, and this week we saw Arsenal's head of football, Raul Sanyehi, and the managing director, Vinay Venkatesham, speak at length to the club, an in-house interview done in two parts. Some of it was a bit like, we've heard all this before, particularly when it came to the owners and what have you, but there was a lot of interesting stuff, I thought, around transfers and transfer business and how we're going to get things done and how long we've been planning to get things done. So before we just talk about some of the specifics in that regard, what did you make of the interview with these two guys? Because we've had a number of years of our chief executive talking a great game about what Arsenal want to be and how we're going to be that and how we're going to get there, and, you know, the old tropes about being as big as Bayern Munich and being able to compete, rather, with Bayern Munich and all that stuff that we heard from Ivan Gazidis, who talked a good game, but there's a sort of corporate doublespeak to a lot of it, or there was anyway, and you can understand people being cynical about hearing the right things, because we now are in a situation where we need to see the right things being done. Now, that will manifest itself over the course of this summer. But how did you view the interview with those two guys, and just what were your impressions of what they said about the club and how they want to run things?
I thought what they said was quite interesting. Like you said, I'm not an Ivan Gazidis fan. I've been pretty vocal in that. I think Arsenal are better off with him now in Milan, waffling away like he does. And I've spoken to Raul a couple of times in the media room at the Emirates, Vina as well, and, you know, they're very passionate people. They've got a really good vision for the club. What I came across in those interviews yesterday or the last couple of days was the need that Arsenal are going to have to be very sort of clever going forward in the market now, which is absolutely 100% the case. They're going to have to be clever because finances are very restricted, given they've been outside the Champions League for 2 years now. And if they don't win in Baku, it's going to be 3, which is going to make things very difficult. So the only way that they're going to close the gap on the top teams, which is massive domestically and European, is by being very clever in the market and how they go about doing business. And I thought that was very interesting, the way they came across, and the stuff on Ramsey's contract as well. I thought he was very open on that, and again, sort of hinting towards the mistakes of the previous regime. He basically said that they were about to push the button Ivan was about to push the button to Ramsey's contract, wasn't he? And then right at the last minute, they decided, once Ivan had gone, that they couldn't do it. It was going to damage the club too much, as Ozil's one has. So I thought that was quite an interesting sort of side of the whole interview, because you look at the situation Arsenal are in now with Mesut Ozil. I mean, it's a disastrous situation, really. They've got a player they don't want. He's raking in obscene amounts of money. He's going to be raking in obscene amounts of money for another 2 years because no one's going to take him. And you know, he doesn't want to go, and that's quite right. He doesn't want to go. I'm not sure anyone would want to go if they're getting 350 grand a week in London. And And yeah, he's just basically saying we've got to avoid those previous mistakes. We've got to turn things around. We can't run the club, run the way the club has been. The wage bill, he said, they both said was too much. And although Vino, I said, you know, it showed the power of Arsenal that they can have a wage bill running at the money it has. The fact is, it's hampering them, and it's going to continue to hamper them until they bring that down. And
Look, that is clearly an issue. They want to use the wage bill more efficiently, and that, I think, will inform a lot of what we do this summer and potentially how we do it. What was your take on Raul when he talked about our transfer business in relation to being either in the Champions League or the Europa League? And he said, you know, if, for example, we're not in the Europa League, and then he said, but that's not going to happen. I can't see how that wouldn't happen, which was quite a nice little piece of confidence ahead of the Europa League final. But he didn't sound like somebody who was overly worried that the summer plans we have, and he said we've got a very good plan, they've been putting things in place, they've been talking to agents, you know, they're in the market, I think was the phrase that he said. He didn't sound like somebody concerned that lack of Champions League football would affect the ability to do what he feels we need to do this summer. So can we read much into that in terms of perhaps the profile of the players that we're targeting and also the money that we might be getting ready to shell out on those particular players? Because if we do qualify for the Champions League, there is a significant increase in cash and revenue that we could bank on in order to fund transfer business.
Yeah, but I think he's going to say that. I mean, I think it was quite interesting that the season ticket renewals went out on the same day as the second interview. I don't think he's going to say, look, we're not going to sign anyone, really. There's no doubt about it. If Arsenal don't win in Baku, that their transfer business is going to be hit in terms of what they want to do in the summer. They'll have different sort of lists drawn up in terms of who they want for the, if they've got an extra 40, 50, 60 million that you will have if you're in the Champions League. Than if you just got a sort of straight up original budget of 40 million, which obviously can be supplemented by player sales and things like that. But
yeah,
I think you're kind of looking at Champions League. You're looking at players potentially like Wilfried Zaha. If you're in the Europa League, you're looking at players potentially like Ryan Fraser. So I think there's definitely a different way of going in the market in terms of where Arsenal are playing. They are actively looking at the moment. You know, they're exploring, they've got targets. William Saliba at St Etienne, they're very, very keen on the young defender. And that's the sort of player that they're looking at. They really want to lower the average age of the squad. They kind of view it as it's an ageing squad. It's a pretty unbalanced squad as well, and they want to sort that out. So Gabriel Martinelli, the young Brazilian forward, is going to come in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much been done. That will happen next month when he turns 18. Martinelli again, 18, Rue. Solid prospect. I mean, I don't know too much about him as a player. I haven't seen much of him, but the people that I've spoken to about him, you know, say he looks like the real deal. He could go on and be a genuine star. And I think that is the sort of player. You look at Guendouzi last summer, that sort of signing.
Yeah.
If Arsenal are going to get back competing with the top, they need to be clever in the market. They need to sign those sort of players, even if it is just to generate income a few years down the line when you sell them on. And you sort of look at the Liverpool model and how they've been able to sort themselves out by signing fairly low cost and then being able to sell those on at high cost and then reinvest that money in the squad. And, you know, they've done that very, very well in recent season with some of their sales. And I think that's what Arsenal have to be looking at. And Raul and Vino both spoke about that. You know, it's not just about signing players, but it's also being able to sell players on at a decent amount of money that you can reinvest in the squad. Because, you know, old Stan over in the US, he's not going to be digging into his pocket anytime soon. And putting his own money in. So any money that Arsenal are going to want to spend in the transfer market, they have to earn it themselves, either via competitions they're playing in, sponsorship, commercial deals. We're seeing that boosted a little bit this summer with Adidas and Emirates, or by raising money through player sales. So
yeah,
they've got to sort themselves out. I was speaking to an agent yesterday, and he was not, he didn't paint quite as good a picture of in terms of where Arsenal are in the market right now compared to some of their rivals. He said that it's quite a confusing outlook at Arsenal in terms of who's doing what. So many people are doing different jobs. People are negotiating with different people. No one really knows who's heading it up. So I think the key thing here Edu's not going to come until after the Copa America, and you just need to get that key figure in place. You can kind of run these things, point everyone in the direction of where the club wants to go, because at the moment you've got a lot of people there, but no one really heading it all up. And so I think they really need to get the technical director in place now, and then they can let Raul do what he does best, because he's not a technical director. He's admitted that himself.
Yeah.
And then you can really move forward. So I think Arsenal taking a bit of a risk. They've decided on Edu. It's going to happen, barring a massive Monchi-esque turn of change of mind right at the last minute, which I don't think anyone's expecting that now. I mean, Brazil already looking at their replacements for Edu already, so that will happen, but it's going to happen right at the end of the transfer window, which isn't ideal.
No, I don't think we can really... we're not going to see the impact that Edu has on the technical direction of the club until maybe January or next year.
Next year, probably.
Which, of course, you know, doesn't do us much good in terms of this summer, but certainly Sanjay, he was talking a good game about what we're going to do this summer and how we're going to do it. So, you know, the proof of the pudding will be come the start of the Premier League season when we see what we've got. I mean, maybe there's an element of Edu being involved with this guy Martinelli, but I think we were interested in him from maybe January of this year. There were rumours about him.
Yeah, I was very much pushed that one. He's basically doing Sven's job since Sven left. He's technically the head of international recruitment, but he has been the head of recruitment since Sven left, and it looks like he will get that job permanently. And you know, he's got really strong South American contacts, and so's Raul as well. So it'll be interesting if Arsenal really start going down the South American route now, because you think with Raul, Francis, and now Edu coming in, they're going to know an awful lot about football in that part of the world. So it'll be interesting if they can get around the work permit issues with some of them, if we're going to see much more of a South American influence coming into the club.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can get over the work permit thing by what I think it's the value of the signing. If it's 10 million or more, you get a work permit automatically. Isn't that the rule that's in place? I think that was the rule that was put in place.
With Martinelli, obviously, he's got Italian passport from one of his parents or something like that.
Well, so hopefully he's not from Silvino, where he got that Italian
already.
Passport. just finally, I think one of the other things that struck me when they were talking about the development of the club and how they're going to rebuild the squad and what way the club is going to operate in the future. They were very, very strong on the academy, on developing players through the academy, bringing players through who, you know, as they say, you know, understand what it means to be an Arsenal player because they've grown up with the club and all that stuff. And we can all identify with that, because that's a great thing when you've got a young player who comes through the academy and has got an Arsenal heart, if you like. But they also talked about it being a cost-effective way of bringing players through to the squad. And that, I think, is an interesting part of it. But it does seem as if they are determined to try and provide opportunities for some of the young players that we have at the moment, because there is a really interesting crop of young talent coming through that could very well provide the club with players who can fit into the first team squad, and also players who might fit in for a season or two but then get sold off to mid-table Premier League clubs, but you know, bring in a fairly substantial amount of income. So I wonder, you know, are they looking at it from that point of view as well, not simply players who can play in the team but as assets, if you like, who can boost the coffers?
I think they probably most definitely are. I mean, they spent an awful lot of money at Haaland in the last few years, and they want to see that investment start paying off in terms of, are you getting players into the first team, or like you say, selling them on and making a decent profit on them. I agree. I thought it was interesting what he said. The last time I spoke to Raul in the media room before one of the games this season, I was asking him about Barcelona, and he was talking about how, you know, that was a team that was essentially built around an academy, and you know, players coming through from the academy, they didn't have to spend that much on it because they had this amazing talented group come through who all were sort of bled Barcelona colours, you know, knew exactly what the club was about, and didn't have to be taught it. They just knew it automatically because they'd been there, it'd been built into them since they were sort of 8 years old. So, and he was saying he wanted to replicate that at Arsenal. My big issue with it is, it's my one negative I've really got about Unai Emery. I don't think he's given enough of those youngsters a chance this season, because Arsenal been desperately crying out for wide attackers. It's been really hampering them in terms of going forward. And I know he's young, but Bukayo Saka and Amici as well, he's really, really talented kids. And yet he didn't play him at all, really. I mean, Saka, he had one run out in the Premier League, didn't he? And he had a start in the Europa League, but I think he could have got more opportunities, because he's, especially Amici, you know, he's out of contract next season, same as Tyrese John-Jules, and it's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to sign new deals, because they are wanted. It's a real change in the picture of how English clubs at the moment, because these academy lads, they used to sit around and wait for their opportunity, but they're not going to do that now, and there's so many European clubs interested in these not just Arsenal players, but everywhere across England.
Yeah.
And they see how talented the group that the teenagers that are being produced in England are now. I mean, Sancho's obviously the flag bearer, and these players are looking at them and looking at Sancho and seeing the success he's had by, you know, leaving Man City, taking the decision to leave there and go abroad, and they want a bit of that success. I don't think, you know, not all of them are going to go and enjoy the success that Sancho has, but you know, they're getting clubs knocking on the door, big European clubs knocking on the door, and they're coming to them with a real plan for their future. You know, step by step, this is your progression plan, this is how you're going to get into the first team, this is what we see you doing. But in England, it's not, they're struggling to get those players into the first team, and I think Arsenal had an opportunity at times this season to certainly give more of the youngsters a chance, and I don't think Emery took it. Even like Joe Willock, you look at Joe Willock, you know, I'm not sure that Joe Willock's good enough to succeed at Arsenal. I do think he's made a big jump in quality this season when he's played, and for the under-23s as well, but he scored 2 goals against Blackpool in the FA Cup, and what was his reward for that? He had about 2 minutes at Huddersfield a month later, and then his next start came on the final day of the season. Players look at that and think, well, what do I have to do to get a bit of a chance here? Because, you know, Ramsey was out for a while, Joe Willock is a goal scoring midfielder, and Arsenal have been crying out for wingers. They've got two really talented wingers in it just below it who have been doing the business in under-23s football, and yet they're not getting a look in when others aren't really contributing goals or assists from that position. Sure. So I think you're going to have to, at some point, if you want to keep hold of these players, you can't not play them. You have to start playing them.
I do agree. But I do, in some ways, feel for Emery in the sense that, you know, it's his first season at the club, and, you know, to sort of go all in on youth when, look, you could say, based on what happened, you know, he might as well have in some of the games given the young players a chance, because some of the senior players didn't do it for him. But I can understand why a manager is kind of reluctant to throw in young players into high pressure situations, you know, and at times this season there were high pressure situations. But in general, I absolutely take your point, and I think you're absolutely right when you talk about the best young English talent is being cherry-picked now. They're looking at the academy setups in England, and they're really good, and there's real talent there. And they know that, you know, particularly the big clubs like Man City, like Chelsea, like Arsenal, you know, it's difficult for players to make the jump, particularly at the top end. It's difficult for players to make the jump from the academy to the first team because, well, you know, they're going out and they're spending 50, 60, 70 million pounds on a player to play in their position.
What was the point of Denis Suarez in
January? Yeah, no, I agree with you.
I don't get that signing at all. I mean,
I agree.
Emery knew him. He said to me, I remember it was after the Blackpool game up at Bloomfield Road when it was all beginning to happen, and I said, you know, where does Suarez play? How do you see him operate? And he said, oh, he's a winger. And I knew he wasn't a winger. And I hadn't managed him for a year. It just seemed really strange because he's not a winger. He's a player that Arsenal got plenty of, pretty enough on the ball, but he's not an out-and-out winger, which is what Arsenal needed, really. And yet you've got wingers sitting on the bench. And I know full well, absolutely know, that a lot of the young players at Arsenal were annoyed with that Denis Suarez signing and felt it was another obstacle for them getting a bit of a chance. And, you know, I don't want to harp on about John-Jules and Amici. It's just the fact that these two are of the current crop coming through, these two are out of contract in a year's time. And, you know, we're talking Bayern Munich, we're talking Lyon, you know, really big European clubs have absolutely made their move for these two already. And they know what's on offer. And, you know, there's contract talks going on now between the club and those two. But I really fear they're going to end up losing them. And it's going to be, you know, you've put all those years into investing them, and then just as they get to the age where they need to start playing now, if you don't start playing them, they're going to be off. So it's a real noble thing, you know, what Raoul was talking about, and we all want to see more academy players coming through. But if that's the model you're gonna take, and if you want to really start seeing the benefits of these young kids now, you can't expect to just wait until they're 20, 21.
Yep.
They won't. They'll be long gone by then. You've got to now do it at 17, 18.
Yeah, another instance of where actions need to speak louder than words. And maybe, you know, what he's saying about highlighting the importance of the academy is to try and hammer home to these guys that, yes, you know, we will give you an opportunity as they try and negotiate new contracts with him, or with them, rather. So, look, we'll wait and see. It's promising to be a very interesting and busy summer. Of course, we do have the Europa League final on Wednesday. Charles, thank you for being here. And listen, safe and relaxing travels there and back. Hope you have a great time.
Yeah, relaxing, I'm not sure is the right word, but hopefully it's all worth it. We get to see Arsenal lifting that trophy on Wednesday.
Absolutely. Thanks a million, man.
Cheers, Andrew.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Thank you very much indeed to Charles. You can find him on Twitter at @Charles_Watts. That's @Charles_Watts. And safe travels to him to and from Baku. And of course, to any Arsenal fan who's listening to this, who is making the journey, I doff my cap to you. It's going to be time consuming. It's going to be costly. It's going to be tiring. But hopefully your loyalty and dedication will be rewarded by a return journey during which you can reflect on the fact that Arsenal have won a European trophy for the first time in 25 years. I suspect it will offset a little bit some of the travel weariness if that's the case. So fingers crossed and good luck to all you guys, and I'm sure you'll represent the club brilliantly out there, even if there are far, far fewer Arsenal fans going to that game than there should be. It is something, of course, we're going to cover on the Arscast Extra on Monday. James and I will preview the game, I guess, and take your questions as usual. A reminder that if you want to sign up for our Patreon, you get extra podcasts, you get ad-free Arscasts, you get a free audio book, you get live streams and all that stuff. It costs a fiver a month and it supports everything else that we do on the site. So if you fancy signing up, patreon.com/arsblog. If you're already a member, thank you very much indeed, and I hope you're enjoying the extra stuff. I'm going to leave it there because there is nothing going on this weekend. There is no game to look forward to. This is the second Arscast in as many days. So hopefully, over the course of these two shows, we put plenty of stuff in your ears that you like. We will continue to do so. But as ever, until the next one, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
So you can see from the presentation I make that we need many players to come in to the club this summer. We need a goalkeeper, a right back, central defender,
Josh,
left back.
What is this man's voice? I don't know, Dad, but I'm so scared. What are we going to do?
He just won't stop talking in that voice.
I have an idea, Dad. What if we give him lots of money to spend on new players? If we want
to... Oh, Josh, you're so funny.
That is where we all want to be.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.